Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today, gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Hello, Roberta.
Hello, Mindy.
Yay. You know, spring is here when we get Roberta back on the air. So, yeah, it's... Oh, you're breaking up there a little bit, Roberta. So we had some beautiful weather yesterday, beautiful weather today. And, you know, people get a little antsy this time of year. They want to just start doing everything, but we have to have some patience, right?
Well, for some things, although there really is a lot you can be doing outside now, take advantage of this good weather before it starts raining again.
So if you haven't already cleaned up, this is a good time to kind of go in there and clean up. And a lot of people think you have to wait to remove your leaves from the garden until it's above 50 degrees, but that's not true.
That is really actually not true. It's become a very popular meme, so to speak, in recent years. The claim is that insects, and they imply all insects, overwinter in leaf litter. And while it is true that some insects do overwinter in leaf litter, most insects, if they overwinter in an adult form or as a larval form, are either in the ground or under bark in crevices, in more sheltered places, not necessarily in leaf litter, although in raking yesterday I did uncover some woolly bears, you know, and I just pick them up and toss them off into a different area because I think they're kind of cute. The purists would have us wait until late May, which is about the time it gets to be 50, you know, on the ground, to clean up our gardens, and there, here on Cape Cod at least, we are blessed with an abundance of wooded areas with tons of leaf litter, wonderful areas for insects to shelter. If you clean up your garden, you're not really impacting the insect population that much.
If you have garden questions this morning, we'd love to hear from you. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And then comes the all-important amending. We should be amending our soil.
Well, I like to say we need to do that in our vegetable beds, our annual beds, on a yearly basis. If you have access to well-rotted manure, it's great to dig that in right now. I end up using Coast of Maine lobster compost on my vegetable beds. In my perennial beds, every couple of years I get a load of compost, and I like to top dress the beds with a thin layer of compost. If you don't want to purchase compost, you can get a leaf shredder. There's something to do with all those leaves. I do have one, and I shred all the leaves in the fall and leave them in a pile. And after a couple of years, it's pretty nicely broken down, and I top dress my perennial beds with that.
Yeah, and of course, if you have your own compost pile, you can use that as well.
So yes,
any
you can.
Any kind
Absolutely.
Of organic material, right, would be okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So folks are also saying, what can I plant now? What needs to wait? And let's start with the vegetable garden. So I've planted so far are peas and lettuce.
Both good choices. I always like to preface when to plant what by making a couple of remarks about soil temperature. A lot of people like to go by the rule, you can plant peas on, you know, St. Paddy's Day. Well, yes, you can, but soil temperatures are pretty darn cold, and those peas are going to take, you know, 3, maybe 4 weeks to germinate, whereas if you wait until the soil temperatures warm up, like right now, and plant your peas, they're going to pop up in a couple of, you know, 4 or 5 days, maybe a week at the most. So definitely peas right now. I like to put in spinach at this time of the year, and I'm not starting seeds indoors this year because I didn't set up my plant lights. But I usually start spinach fairly early and put transplants out into the garden at this time. Spinach needs to go in early because once the days start getting longer towards the end of May and it really warms up, we hope, spinach bolts.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it. That's just what it does.
Yeah.
So peas, lettuce, spinach, beets, carrots, onion sets. If you have onion seedlings and they've been hardened off, onion seedlings can go out now. You want to wait on your tomatoes and peppers.
Yeah.
I see a lot of questions on the Cape Cod Gardening Facebook page about, can I plant my dahlias yet? And the answer is no. You know, still too cold for dahlias.
Yeah. Although I will say I didn't get around to digging my dahlias up in the fall, which I always do. Didn't do it this year. I don't remember why. But so it's a test now because we had a pretty mild winter. So I think I might be lucky and some might come back. I've had that happen before where I've forgotten one and I went, oh, look, it came back. So
I think you are correct. Yeah. It was a relatively mild winter. We only had a short cold spell, which is not to say April is, what was it, T.S. Eliot said April is the cruelest month. We sometimes get a surprise in April. So you just have to be careful with some of the tender stuff.
Yeah. And with the dahlias, my bigger worry is the amount of rain we had that they may have rotted, right?
Yeah.
Because it's been so wet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll have to keep you posted on the dahlia experiment. The other thing that drives me crazy, you know those little wild onions that grow?
Oh my God, they're taking over my yard.
I know, they're crazy. I don't mind as much in the lawn because they can get mowed over, but they started moving into one of my perennial beds, and I yesterday spent a bunch of time digging those things out.
Which is frustrating because you think you get them all, and next year you have three times as many.
That's so true.
What I have started doing in the past several springs is I just take my heavy rake and turn it upside down so it's the flat edge, mm-hmm. not the tines, and I force them down flat against the ground, and it breaks the stem, and so the stems die. Doesn't do anything about the little bulbs that are in the ground. They will come back, but at least I don't have the appearance of them on top of the ground.
Yeah.
There's really not much you can do about them.
Yeah, that's a,
unless you want to use chemicals, which I don't.
Yeah, I don't either. And the other thing, of course, the other bane in my existence is the bindweed. Ugh.
Bindweed.
Oh, it's terrible. And you just can't get rid of it. It's everywhere. It spreads and just keeps going. And you know, you can pull those roots out, but there's more underneath that. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I planted a double flowered, what was called the morning glory, given to me by a wonderful horticulturist, Bill Cannon, who sadly passed away. Absolutely beautiful, pale pink, lovely double flowers. And it seeded itself, and everything that came back was pale pink single flower bindweed. And I've spent years now pulling it out, so no more morning glories for me.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. So now, and then on the flower sides, what can we plant? Now, we have, of course, all the spring bloomers, the daffodils are up, tulips are coming up.
Yep.
And, yeah,
yep.
It's so pretty, hyacinth.
You know, you want to look for the cold-tolerant plants, obviously pansies and violas, mm-hmm. which are so cheerful and pretty. I love them in the spring.
Me too.
But alyssum is pretty tough at this point. Stock is fairly cold-hardy. Fairly soon, some snaps will begin appearing at your favorite garden center. Mm-hmm. Snaps are fairly cold-hardy. But definitely you want to hold off on the warmer, loving flowers.
Yeah. The Al in South Yarmouth writes, I recently added a solar system with battery storage to my home. I love the solar savings, but hate the look of the power wall. Can you please recommend what I should plant that will quickly hide it? They are located on the north side of the house. What should I plant? How much should I spend?
Well, I can't say what you should spend. That's clearly an individual thing. Whatever you plant, you want to plant it far enough away from the actual power wall so when the solar company or you come in to do maintenance or to access the power controls, there's going to be room enough for people to get in. I put solar on the house a number of years ago, and I have a number of shrubs, a lilac and a T. viburnum and a fothergilla that are now cut down to the ground last fall because they all got too big and nobody could access that side of the house. So pretty much any plant you want that looks pretty, maybe blooms in spring and has green foliage, you know, the rest of the year, but you want to make sure you allow access behind it.
Yeah. Another early thing we can plant now that's so pretty are sweet peas. Excuse me.
Yeah.
You have, they climb up on a trellis, and they're just another one that I feel like is a kind of a cheerful flower.
It is, and it's an old-fashioned flower that people don't think of very often. You can start them indoors from seed or shortly at garden centers. I don't think they're there yet. You can usually buy them in six packs.
Mm-hmm.
I know the garden center I work at does carry them in early spring. Very cheerful, and they are truly an early spring flower. They don't want the summer, so mm-hmm. if you're putting them in your window boxes, you'd be prepared to replace them with something as the weather gets really warm.
Yeah, exactly. Lisa in Plymouth says, I'm beginning the spring cleanup of my garden. This involves removing the dead stems from things such as coneflowers, cardinal flowers, milkweed, and Joe pieweed and disposing of it. My thought this year is instead of removing this material, I'll cut it into pieces several inches long and then put it back on the ground. Is that a good idea or should I remove it?
It's not a bad idea. It certainly eventually those stems will break down and become organic matter, which we're always telling folks to put in. I generally move them more for appearance than anything else, particularly if there's some of the larger stems. I know right now I was looking at my perennial hibiscus, which at this point always look dead as a doornail. They don't start to sprout until late May, and I'm thinking I'm going to cut back those stems. And yes, I could cut them up into very small pieces, but that's extra labor. I don't have the time to do that.
Yeah.
So they get put in the wheelbarrow with everything else and trucked off into the woods.
I have many lilies, and some of them are really tall. So same thing. I had the same with all the stems, and we just mm-hmm. we put them in the fire pit and just burned them. And you know,
yeah.
of course, my grandson just any reason for a fire in the fire pit.
Oh, he would love that.
Good for. I'll get the marshmallows.
Yeah. Speaking of lilies, they are coming up right now, and they along. Things like hostas are absolute delectable food for rabbits.
Oh.
So if you really enjoy your lilies, then I would highly recommend you be using a repellent on them right now as they're pushing out of the ground, or fence them off with some chicken wire. Find some way to put a barrier, either a chemical as in a plant skid or you know, scram or something like that, or a physical barrier over them. Otherwise, you might not have your lilies this year.
You know, the rabbits have been brutal. Usually, I don't have that big of a problem with them, but I was out in the garden looking around yesterday, and the leaves on my... If it's not rabbits, I don't know what it is. My muscari leaves are eaten down. My hosta, it's crazy. And I wonder, how about peppermint oil? Does that work at all with rabbits? Do you know?
As far as I know, it does not.
Does not. Okay.
It does not. Rabbits and other plant eaters are kind of a vegetarian, and what does distract them is protein.
Mm.
So if you look at the ingredients of many of the repellents, it might be blood, it might be rotten eggs, it's other type of animal protein that has an offensive odor to the bunnies. Plant skid, I have heard, I haven't used it, but I have heard, is the most effective.
Oh, I'm going to work that.
Plant
skid,
blood.
Okay. All right.
Dry blood.
I'm going to try that. Because, I mean, the dog, unfortunately our dog passed away, but the dog kept the rabbits at bay. And now that the dog is gone, the rabbits are they're taking over. So, another reason to get another dog, right?
There you go. You always need another dog.
You always need another dog. We're talking gardening this morning with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Love to hear your garden questions. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. It's Gardening This Morning with horticulturist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Chris writes, is it too early to put potted lavender in the ground?
That's a good question. If it's perfectly hardened off, you might get away with that. To be safe, though, I might wait another couple of weeks.
I have terrible luck with lavender. I've given up.
I've given up on lavender myself.
Yeah. It's so funny how some plant, like I have oriental poppies that do beautifully in my yard, and I to dig some up, you know, because they get a little bit big and give them to other people, and they don't have the same luck. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny
how
plants can be particularly like one yard better than another. Let's see. All right. We have CLL says, my small front yard is deliberately moss and looks beautiful. It doesn't need to stand up to foot traffic and enhances the flower border. The backyard is a blend of grass seed and micro clover. The moth from a nearby path is beginning to sneak in. What can I use that won't eliminate the clover? The backyard needs to withstand foot traffic.
Yeah, moss is, it's amazing this spring. I look out my front yard, except for the lawn area, but all my beds, I have large beds in the front yard, and they're almost completely mossed over, which I find attractive. Mm. I don't mind it. The beds are mainly shady, and this is also starting to happen in the backyard, and it's taking over the grass, too, which is eventually going to become a moss path. There are materials you can use that will eliminate moss, but moss grows when the conditions favor it. And unless you change those conditions, the moss is just going to keep coming back. So I'm of the mind where, you know, you could try to remove it and overseed with a shade blend of grass and more clover, or you could learn to live with it.
I'm with you. I love it. I think, it can take over all the grass as far as I'm concerned in my yard. But yeah, same thing. You know, it's interesting. I have these beautiful little yellow flowers in my front yard in the lawn that I thought was aconite. But then Jenny corrected me, and it's lesser celandine, which I was like, oh, it's so pretty, but it's a, I didn't know this. It's a big invasive, right? I mean,
yes.
That can take over.
I'm so sorry. It's taking over my asparagus bed.
Oh, no.
And, you know, I can't just dig it out because then I'm digging up the asparagus, and the roots are fairly deep. It's taking over. It was growing in the paths, and I thought, oh, isn't that pretty? and I just go out there and weed whack it, and it keeps it down. But, you know, it's coming up in my beds now, so I need to come up with a good way to get rid of it. And since it's my vegetable garden, I can't really use any sort of weed killer.
Right. I mean, it's a very pretty little yellow flower, I guess, in the
buttercup
family. Lucky for me, it's in the front yard lawn that can be mowed. So, you know, mow
it's
it down.
Green.
But it is spreading, and it's partly going into my neighbor's lawn as well. So
I think the common name is creeping buttercup. And creeping, it lives up to that name.
Yeah, it sure does. Although, you know, I mean, there's pros and cons to everything. I guess on the pro side, it is an early flower, early pollinator, right?
Mm-hmm. So,
but again.
And it's green.
Could be worse, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So if you're starting, you know, some of the like tomatoes and things indoors, how is now the time? I mean, because usually we're looking to put them out at the end of May, right?
Yeah. I usually start when I'm starting seeds, maybe next year. I just, for the listeners, I'm working on a new hip here, so I'm limited in my physical activity, but we're walking unassisted now, but we were not up to putting together my plant lights, so no seed starting this year. I usually start them right at the beginning of April, so we're 2 weeks in. You could still start them now. They will catch up once they get out in the ground and it's warm towards the end of May. So tomatoes, peppers, right about now I'm usually starting my cucumber seedlings indoors. I like to transplant those out sometime in early May. I cover them because they are subject to cold damage, frost damage. It's hard to say what our frost-free date is anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our climate has really changed. So those are the sorts of things you could start indoors now. If you don't feel like putting together, you know, your seed starting operation yet already, all of our garden centers will be getting these in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure there's much you cannot get through one of our fine local garden centers.
Right.
And there are a couple of places that also just focus on vegetables and sunflowers, and they're only open for short periods, like from May to the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
Matt's Organics in Dennisport and Jenny's Edibles and mm-hmm. Seeds in Falmouth. And if you're looking for unusual varieties, even if you start your own seeds, both of these places just have wonderful plants.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I visit them every spring.
And very healthy, right? And they're growing them from seed here, yeah.
Yep.
Since you mentioned the garden centers, that's one of the things I wanted to mention. The garden centers have such knowledgeable people about our local climate, and they can tell you, you know, what can go out now and what can't. Because some of the big box stores, you see stuff outside and you go, you know, why is there basil outside now, right?
Well,
and you
yes.
and you think you buy it, you go, oh, it's outside, I can put it outside in my yard, but you can't.
Yes. I mean, you can go to Home Depot and buy eggplant.
Exactly.
You know? It's like,
exactly.
It's like the middle of April. It's like, no. Yes. Yeah. Is it going to die?
Probably.
Maybe not, but it's not going to thrive.
Right. So, you know, yeah. So, a wealth of information at our local garden
absolutely.
Centers, and they'll be happy,
absolutely.
Happy to help you. 866-999-4626 is our number for your garden questions. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I know you mentioned the plant's good for rabbits, but if folks have any other ideas on keeping the rabbits under control, we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Paula writes, we received a tulip plant last spring as a sympathy gift when our dog passed away. I planted the bulbs in the fall. All the bulbs came up in March, but only one has a stalk and a flower. Any idea why?
If it were a tulip that had been forced into bloom, those can be planted, but they usually do not bloom the following year. They need to acclimate in their area before they will come back in subsequent years, if they come back in subsequent years.
Mm-hmm.
Tulips, I have found, aren't reliably perennial.
Right.
And most landscapers who do professional plantings generally pull the tulips when they're all done.
Yeah, put them in every year, yeah.
And put new ones in every fall. So
yeah.
They're not. There are some that are reliably perennial. I can't tell you their names because I don't grow a lot of tulips. The rabbits mm-hmm. and the squirrels love them.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, they're not something that come back on a regular basis.
Yeah. I get so mad at the squirrels because the squirrels, they go and they bite off the flower.
Yep.
And they leave it there.
Yep.
They don't
absolutely.
Even eat it. They just like, let me get. I always want to add more crocus, but I'm like, I'm not even going to bother because it's so frustrating. The squirrels just eat them.
The squirrels eat them. The rabbits mow my crocus down. I can't tell you how many years I have planted. You'd think I would have a field full of crocus right
now. I know, right?
Because I've planted so many of them. And if I get, you know, half a dozen blooms, I'm going, oh, look,
yeah.
It's a crocus.
I know, it's terrible. And it's true. And the tulips, I do have tulips that come back, but I'm thinking of, I have these, can't remember what they are, but they're red. And the first year I planted them, they were very tall and just beautiful. And now they're little, like half that size, and some come back and some don't. But
yeah.
You know, yeah, throw a couple in here or there. But you're right, it's hard to get a nice showy tulip to come back every year.
It is. I know folks who have very large containers, and they will plant them in the fall with bulbs, and they get a gorgeous display in spring. And then they replant the container when the bloom is done.
Yeah. All right, a lot of people want to know about hydrangeas, right? Because we've had a couple of tough years for our hydrangeas.
Fingers crossed, this could be a fabulous year. I shouldn't say that because I'm probably jinxing it now, but my hydrangeas look wonderful this year. They are beginning to leaf out. I have very little winter damage on them. So again, fingers crossed. I'm hoping for a good display. I have, again, on social media seen a lot of people saying, can I prune my hydrangeas now? And they're talking about the mop heads, the blue hydrangeas. And these flower, for the most part, on old wood. So if you're pruning out the old wood, you're pruning out the flower blossoms. So generally, I say do not prune your hydrangeas at this point. Wait a little bit longer and then see if there are any dead stems. You can take dead stems out right down to the base of the plant. If you have a really well-established hydrangea that's, say, 5 or more years old, you can selectively take out a few good stems at the base, some of the older stems. You'll see the bark will be much rougher on those stems. And by removing those, it's sort of like pruning a blueberry. You're encouraging new shoots to come up that will bloom the following year. So that's sort of a rejuvenation type of pruning. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you want to wait a couple of weeks and then only prune out dead wood. If it's a white hydrangea like a paniculata, those bloom on new wood. You can prune those back as much as you'd like. At this point right now.
Exactly. All right. So, Dana, so you were talking about moss earlier in the hour. Is it possible to transplant moss from one part of my lawn to another? Any tips or suggestions?
There are some books out there that you might find at a library. Do a Google search for a title and then take advantage of the CLAM system and put on a request at one of your local libraries that talk about moss gardening. It can be done. Moss likes shade, although it will also grow in the sun. It likes moisture. So if your soil tends to be soil moisture retentive or damp, it's a great place for moss. It really doesn't care if it's acid or alkaline. Some people think liming their moss will make it go away. It doesn't. So yes, you can. Some people have suggested when moss is, I don't want to call it blooming, it's sporulating. You'll see it sends up these little structures that have the spores in it. Some people collect those, put them in a blender with a weak solution of buttermilk, which apparently is acidic, and they spray that over an area they want the moss to grow in, and reports are it works very well. Oh. I personally haven't done it, but it's worth a try.
Yeah, why not, right? Dana writes, the dreaded Japanese knotweed, help.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That is one of the more invasive plants we have here in New England, in the United States. As the name suggests, it is from Asia, and it is was originally brought to this country as an ornamental, and when it blooms, it's absolutely gorgeous, but it just takes over. It will come up through pavement. I mean, it's just really one tough plant. Constant mowing, constant mowing. Don't let it, and eventually it takes time, but eventually it the root system is starved and it will die. There are some very strong chemicals that are applied to kill it, but I would not recommend them to homeowners.
Yeah. And that's the thing with invasives. And Cape Cod Cooperative Extension, you can go online there and you can see a list, because you'll look at some of these things, like my beautiful little celandine, that's a pretty flower.
Exactly.
But, you know, an invasive is not a good thing because it takes over, and then, of course, it can crowd out some of our native plants. So and I guess this is true when you have folks with perennial gardens giving you some of their things from their garden, you want to think about why. Like, I'm so sorry I ever took Lily of the Valley from
you and me both. Even though it's pink and it's beautiful and it smells lovely, it just has taken over an entire bed, and there's really no way to get rid of it.
I know. I dig it up, but you know what? It comes right back. It's so hard to get
back.
It all.
Yeah.
And then I made the mistake of moving something from one end of the garden to the other side, and now I have it on both sides.
You have it everywhere.
I know.
You know, sometimes times I love to visit plant sales, but you have to think if someone has enough of something that they can dig it up for and give it away for a plant sale, why is that?
Yeah.
Is it something that like multiplies rapidly?
Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, it's because like the bearded iris, it multiplies, but it isn't invasive. You know, I mean, you can easily dig that up and share that.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just thinking about how much space you want to, like, the same thing with the irises, the Japanese iris, Siberian iris, They, if you don't dig them up every 3 or so years, they die in the middle and look kind of yucky.
Do.
Yeah, so you gotta do a little homework on what you're putting in your garden.
Exactly.
All right, so we've got a email that says, please restate the names of nurseries or more special garden shops in the Cape. I'm new to the Cape and eager to find sources of plantings. There are loads of them, but I think you mentioned the two that were doing the vegetables, and it was Jenny's Edibles and Matt's in Dennis?
Matt's Organics in Dennisport.
Yeah. And you they're open. I think many of them are opening soon, if not already. And I tell you, it gets picked over quick, right?
So Matt's Organics is opening Friday, April 26th. And I believe Jenny's Edibles is opening Thursday, May 2nd.
Yeah.
They both have websites, so you can go on their websites and check that information. Many of our local specialty, you know, regular nurseries also tend to have specialty plants as well. So I'm advocating that we have fabulous garden centers here
all
on
over
Cape Cod.
Yeah,
all
we have lots
over
of them.
Cape Cod.
Yeah, exactly.
And I highly recommend visiting them. In spring, I usually make sort of a big journey and visit many of them all on the same day.
Load up. Why not?
That's right.
We're talking gardening this morning with Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Point. It is Gardening This Morning with horticulturalist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We talked a little bit about pruning of hydrangeas, but I think a lot of people get confused this time of year going, what do I prune now? What weights? Pretty much any dead wood you can take out now, right?
For any plant, hydrangea or lilac or any of our plants, one thing we had this winter and spring, we had a lot of storms with winds, 45, 50, 60. I think in Mashpee there was a 70-mile-an-hour gust. Very windy over the winter, and my yard is littered with broken branches and twigs. And I have a lilac that has one major branch is like fallen over to the ground, but it's still attached. That obviously has to be pruned off. So anything with broken branches, if you're looking to open up sort of an overgrown shrub, anything that's growing back into the center of a shrub should probably be pruned off. Any branches that are crossing and rubbing, one of them should probably be pruned off. If you're trying to rejuvenate a shrub, some of the oldest branches taken off right at the ground level. So there's a lot we can do right now, regardless of when the plant blooms. And it's often better to sacrifice some of the bloom to rejuvenate a shrub, and it will be healthier and look better over the course of time.
Yeah. A lot of folks like to trim back the forsythia once it's done blooming, though, right?
Well, for plants that bloom, the rule of thumb, plants that bloom in early spring, usually before, mid-June, July, they bloom on old wood, so you wait until after they finish blooming to do your major pruning. Again, things like lilac, woodgelia, beauty bush, things like that. Things that bloom from summer on, generally bloom on new wood, so you can prune them happily in spring, and that, you know, the PG hydrangeas and, right. and things like that.
Right. Carol in Falmouth writes, I have a precocious rhubarb, one of three growing in the same area. This one came up in late February, and now it has a huge flower stalk shooting up. Presumably, I should decapitate it. True? And how late in the season should the flower stalks be discouraged?
Generally, people are encouraged generally to cut that flower stalk off, so theoretically the energy will go into strong roots and strong stems. The rhubarb flower is gorgeous. So there are actually ornamental cultivars of rhubarb that you can grow in your perennial border. They're quite large, and most of the flowers tend to be pinkish or purplish, and they're beautiful. So the rhubarb flower itself is quite lovely. If this is a well-established plant, enjoy the flower. You know, yeah. Don't let it go to seed. Once it's done flowering, cut that stalk off, but go ahead and enjoy it. If it's a new plant, you just planted it in the past couple of years, then when you see that flower stalk beginning to push up, cut it right off.
Yeah. You know who else has a beautiful flower? Potatoes. Who would think, right? But
yes,
the potato flower is so, I almost want to grow it just for the flowers.
Yeah. Most of them are a pretty purple flower, and they're quite nice. And potatoes actually form a little green fruit. It's not edible. But it does bear the seeds, and that's how different hybrids are developed through, crossbreeding.
Yeah. Richard writes, my yard is being taken over by weeds. Is there a weed killer that I can use that will not kill the grass? And how do I get rid of moss in the yard? Thank you for your help.
Moss is a tough one to get rid of, which is why I've learned to love it, mm-hmm. because I've spent many years fighting it and just said, you know, I give up, and now I love it.
Just mow them. Just mow the weeds with the grass, right? We don't.
You can mow the if you. Some people really want a lawn with no weeds, a monoculture,
so
and it
hard.
Can be achieved, but it's very hard. Generally, if you go to your garden center and speak to someone in the department that handles the products, they can refer you to a broad-leafed weed killer, because most of the weeds in a lawn are what we call broad-leafed, dandelions, plantain, things like that. And you can apply these materials at the proper time. It will read the label. Mm-hmm. It's always on the label. It will tell you how to use this material appropriately. And that can take care of broad-leafed weeds. Or you can learn to love the weeds. have a diverse Cape Cod lawn.
There you go. Elizabeth writes, I have a well-established rhododendron that I over-fertilized last year. I tried to prune it back, but it grew up blocking my kitchen window. I stopped because I didn't want to prevent any blooms. I'll wait till it blooms to prune, but if I cut it all back, how long will I have to wait to get new blooms?
Depends on how far back she cuts it. You can do a total renovation, which is basically cutting it almost to the ground. They did this at Heritage Plantation a number of years ago. Of all the rhododendrons, as you walk in the entrance on the right-hand side, there was a big row under the trees of rhodies, and they cut those all back. And they've come back, and I'm pretty sure they've bloomed since then. But it takes a number of years. If you prune it back to an appropriate height, again, new growth that will come out should bloom next year. The best recommendation might be to transplant it, because it sounds as though it's not in the right spot.
Yeah. Right, a listener in Yarmouth asked, when is the best time to fertilize rhubarb? Can one use a 10-10-10? When is the best month to transplant rhubarb?
The best time to transplant it is as soon as possible, or wait till the fall. Mm-hmm. And yes, a 10-10-10 is fine for rhubarb, fine for asparagus. I find in spring, when the soils are still cold, the synthetic fertilizers are more readily available, both to established plants like rhubarb and asparagus, and also to your seedlings that you put in. As the soil warms up, gets to be above 60, closer to 70, the organic fertilizers become more readily available as well. So I tend to use either a 5-10-10 or a 10-10-10 early in spring and then switch to a plant tone type of fertilizer.
866-999-4626 is our number for your garden questions. That's 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, so I had a couple of poinsettias that I had around the holidays, and usually I toss them, but this year I thought, well, I'll just keep them. And they're okay. They're starting to shed some leaves. Am I crazy to think I can actually keep them and put them outside when it gets warmer?
No, you can.
Yeah. Do they do okay?
They will do okay. You need to prune them fairly hard, mm-hmm. And they'll still get quite big.
Oh.
And then in the fall, you have to give them the 14-hour treatment of darkness to get them to produce colored bracts. Mm-hmm. It's a fun thing to do every now and then. I've done it. Mm-hmm. Not in recent years, but they do get big. Mm-hmm. The reason they stay relatively small when you buy them through your local garden center is they've been treated with growth regulators at the growers, which tend to keep them more compact.
Right. So if I were to put them in a container outside, should I trim them back now or wait till I'm about to put them outside? And what should I feed them?
You could do either. Prune them back now or prune them back when you move them out. And I've been using the past couple of years for indoor plants. And I use them for outdoor plants too in my containers. C-Max, which is a nice fertilizer. It's not 100% organic, but a large portion of it is. And you mix it with water according to the label and use it as a soil drench. And I get really good results with that. I use it on all my house plants, of which I now have over 200.
Oh, my goodness, Roberta.
It's a jungle.
Oh, yeah. Boy, you're watering a lot there. So I noticed that my rosemary sort of made it. Usually my rosemary does great until about February and then forget it.
Yeah.
And it's one of them died. The other one, there's still just a little bit of green on it, and I'm thinking I'm probably going to have to buy a new one. But why is it we just can't? I remember a friend having rosemary in Vermont, a big bush that came back every year. And I'm thinking, why can't I get my rosemary to come to stay alive?
I don't know, and I have even grown the ARP variety, which is theoretically very hardy. And you're right, mine looked great into February.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went out into the garden in March and was able to clip. Most of them were turning brown, but I needed some rosemary for a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't drive then, so I couldn't go to the store. So I clipped some of the rosemary, and now the whole thing's brown.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's all going to be pulled out. I just have no luck in overwintering rosemary.
Me either.
Some people pot it up and bring it indoors.
Mm-hmm.
I have done that.
Yeah, I have done that in the past. Yeah, but you know, then it gets to a size that it's kind of a pain.
It gets too big, and it gets powdery mildew.
Yeah, better just to get a new one. All right, Jenny writes: people seem to do different types of pruning on raspberries and blackberries. What do you do?
I don't grow blackberries because they take over. With raspberries, there are two types of raspberries. There are the June bearers, which actually is closer to July, and they bear on, it's hard to explain. You put them in, they put up a stem this year that next year will bear the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So once they bear fruit, you cut off that fruiting stem because it's not going to bear again, and you encourage the growth of new stems this year for fruiting next year. And then we have fall bearers, which bear two crops, a spring crop and a fall crop. They are better if you just prune them down to the ground at this time of the year and only get the stems for the fall. They bear on new wood.
Hmm. Okay. We put up our hummingbird feeder this weekend. I know that any time now, I looked at the hummingbird map
now.
And they're New York, New Jersey.
Yep.
But as my grandson reminded me, the first ones here really need the food.
They do.
And it's so funny to look out there now and see that, you know, red on the hummingbird feeder that stands out. And in a, you know, couple of months, that'll blend right in with all the flowers and everything that are out there.
But it seems like the average date for the Cape is around April 25th, 26th, give or take a day or two. So we're right on the cusp of that happening. So, sure, I would definitely make up a sugar solution and put it in my feeder and hang it out any day now.
Yeah, yeah. And we should mention, now, the frost date has been like May 10th, right? But we don't, I mean, with climate change, we don't, you were saying earlier, we really just don't even know when.
I hesitate to give a frost date either in spring or fall these days. I don't think the ground froze until January last year.
Yeah.
And even then, I don't think it was a very deep freeze in the soil. And in spring, some years it'll be cold until June, and other years, like this, you know, yesterday was absolutely stunning.
And today too,
And today too, yes, I plan on doing some raking. Yeah. I got my first blister of the season yesterday.
All right, so I want to ask you about fig trees, because I know we have sometimes listeners who talk about their fig trees, and we've had some
on the vineyard.
We've had some. I don't know how Jenny, how's your fig tree doing? Good, okay. She's got thumbs up, because remember we had a 1 year there where it was really tough for some of the bigger fig trees that folks had.
Oh, hers went up to her second floor window.
I know,
I remember
beautiful.
Seeing it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they're doing okay.
They seem to be doing okay. Most people bring their figs indoors. I have one in a very large pot. I believe the cultivar is called Olympia, and it was said to be extremely hardy. And I left it outdoors in this big pot. I pulled it up against the back of the chimney, so it's in a very sheltered location. And all the buds are green.
Great.
So I'm knocking on wood. I also have one called Chicago Hardy, and it is reliably hardy. It comes back every year. It's in the ground, and it maybe bears fruit 1 year out of five. Mm. So I keep saying I need to dig the darn thing up and just put something else there.
All right. Denise and Arlene says, I have an amaryllis, the red wax covered one, which has bloomed twice since January 1st. I have healthy green leaves at this point. Can I plant this outside? Does it need any particular conditions?
Well, it's not, they're not hardy, so you can plant it outside once the weather, probably not till mid-May. It will not live over the winter. So if you really want to keep it, what I would do is remove the wax and pot it up in a pot with good potting soil.
Yeah. I put mine out, the pots outside. I do that with, you know, I have I don't know what it's called. It's in the violet family. But I take all these and my orchids, and I just put them out, and I put them out behind my holly trees. It's sort of shady, dappled shade there. And they sometimes I go back there and I'm like, whoa, my gosh, everything's blooming.
All my plants go on summer vacation on Memorial Day. It's like that's a major trek. Everything gets taken outside, regardless of is it an orchid, is it a cactus, is it you know, one of my philodendrons. Everything goes outside into a dappled shade area to harden off, and then they get either repotted if they need it, or they get moved to an appropriate environment for them.
Yeah, and you'd be amazed that they really thrive on that. Something about being outside really just kind of rejuvenates them, as you said. They get a little vacation. And again, just so I want to mention, if you're not sure what to plant when, or what our local garden centers have all kinds of information, you can always check with them. And of course, we'll have Roberta. This is the first of the gardening season, so it'll be the third Tuesday of the month. Roberta will be here to answer all of our questions. As always, thank you so much, Roberta Clark.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.